Since Dave said carbon sequestration, I wanted to mention if he'll come out to the University of Washington, he learned about the great things about carbon in rocks. I'll try and turn him on a little bit to the idea of substitution, which isn't a very much discussed thing in this particular conference, but maybe should be. I'll just quickly tell you what I mean by substitution, if you're not familiar with the term. And the idea, in terms of the global carbon cycle, is that if you don't produce wood and cut it and saw it up into product and use it to build homes, you will use something else. And for instance, I had a neighbor about 10 years ago that was remodeling their house, and they were so proud that they weren't having an impact on the global carbon cycle. This was a very well-read, actually fairly wealthy neighbor, because they were using steel, basically to replace 2x4s in their new walls. And so since they weren't cutting trees, they weren't having an impact on global carbon. Well, actually, they would have done much better to have used 2x4s because of the problems of substitution. If we're going to have an economy and we're going to build things and we're going to live in houses, we can live in wood houses, but we don't have to. We can live in steel, concrete, plastic houses, I guess. But substitution is where, if you take a typical house, okay, and they vary quite a bit. In Brazil, they hardly use any wood at all. In Seattle, they use a lot of wood. A lot of the wood, in terms of mass, a lot of the structure tends to be things like concrete. But wood is one of the primary components in the livable structure itself. You can substitute steel for a certain part of wood. You can do wood for steel and concrete and so on. But when you change this mix, you do use something else, okay? And wood has been evaluated in terms of its net impact on carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And it's been found in study after study after study that if you substitute concrete or steel, you put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere to produce that. A quick question, why does wood put carbon dioxide into the atmosphere? Because you haul it, you cut it up, you also use fossil fuels to process and use wood. This is an evaluation, for instance, by Perez Garcia and Lipke as part of the Rural Technology Initiative Quorum project at the University of Washington that's been going on and recently ended. And they found that if you look at, in this case, two 80-year rotations, so they've projected out 160 years into the future, starting from scratch with a new forest, you would see carbon going into the stand. And if you had thinnings, pre-commercial and commercial thinnings and so on, you would see changes in the amount of forest carbon. You'd also be taking out products of a managed forest. You wouldn't if the forest wasn't managed. That would be integrated into society and into structures and things like that, possibly used for firewood. But in any case, when it's used, it substitutes for other products. And then this substitution is their little green thing here. Over time, substitution becomes the really, really big impact on global carbon, not sequestration. That's one of their conclusions. And we don't see this very often in presentations, at least in Soil Science Society of America. The objectives of the study were to look at substitution of wood for concrete, steel, and so on, and see if that reduces CO2 in the atmosphere. We have in the Pacific Northwest a number of ways that we can manage our forest, but one of the things I've worked on all the time I've been there, but for a substantial amount of time, has been fertilization as a treatment that can impact carbon in forests. So the other thing was to look at substitution, okay, and the effect of fertilization on managed forest over a period of time. We haven't really considered that very much. And we wanted to quantify both the soil, the forest, and the substitution effects. So fertilization's been going on for a period of time. It's, of course, been going on in agriculture nearly as long as agriculture has occurred, but it's become a very formal industrial input into agriculture in forests as well. It could be said that you couldn't really grow eucalyptus in Brazil without fertilizing it. You really couldn't grow pines in the southeast without phosphorus very well, at least in many cases. You could grow Douglas fir, and it often is grown, but we found through a lot of research for several decades that nitrogen fertilization is the key. If you consider all the nutrients possible, yeah, some other ones are very important in other places, but nitrogen has been the nutrient to which forests respond the most often. So we're talking about nitrogen fertilization when we talk about Douglas fir and the coastal region. And those responses vary quite a lot. It's actually one of the things we found out. If we could do a better job of estimating the response or picking out the stands that respond the most, we could probably have a lot more fertilization going on in the Pacific Northwest, but it's variable. This represents possibly not the average, but maybe a pretty good response. So you, in this case, the stand was grown for 13 years, and then there's an additional 13 years of response after fertilization. And the typical response is something on the order of about 15 to 20% on a 40-year rotation. An industry is built around this, and typically fertilizer is applied in many cases very carefully and GPS and GIS controlled in most cases, not the very youngest forests because of competition, but to forests a couple decades before harvest is going to occur. You can see that here. The stand management cooperative's been having studies occurring since 1969. Each one of these dots here or squares represents at least one installation. You can see Puget Sound and Washington here and Oregon there. So this has been going on for quite a long time in several hundred different installations. The net result of this is a range of response in this case, site class. Site class 1 or 2 would be very high responders. Site class 2, 35 to 45 meters of height growth in Douglas fir in 50 years. So pretty productive. And then at the lower site classes, you get the highest percent response at the lowest sites and the lowest percent response at the highest sites. Okay, a typical of the average of all these studies has been something on the order of about 38 megagrams of carbon increase over a 40-year rotation, and this is an estimate. It varies quite a bit. We could probably shunt that into a higher number if we knew where to put the fertilizer better. In the case of using that average, if we assume that increase over a 40-year rotation and about 20 million hectares, which I got out of a Forest Service publication, not all this land is exactly the same, but this is the manageable land in Washington and Oregon, we would come up with something on the order of 0.7 gigatons of carbon over a 40-year rotation, which comes out to 0.02 gigatons. And what do we got? About a 6 gigaton excess. So not going to solve the problem, but could be a substantial contribution to it. One of the problems is that only about 25,000 hectares a year are fertilized in Washington, so the net impact of that is only about a thousandth of a gigaton. Soil is the pool where carbon is, but it's largely ignored as a pool that can be manipulated by fertilization. But there's been several studies, I guess they've all been done by my people, in terms of the fertilization in Washington and Oregon with nitrogen of Doug fir. But basically, there's three studies by Canary and four by A.B. Adams, and they showed about an 8 megagram carbon per hectare increase because of fertilization with nitrogen. So that is even not a smaller contribution to sequestration. In the case of current, about 2/1000th of a gigaton, and 0.2/1000th of a gigaton. In the case of if all that land were fertilized, about 4/1000th of a gigaton. I said I was going to talk about substitution, and again, there's been a number of studies that, in this case, they've related for different environmental impacts. Wood being a factor of 1, and then steel and concrete. You can see the use of energy here. This is one of the reasons why wood is an effective substitute for concrete and steel in terms of reducing global carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere in an industrial economy, which the United States very much is and will likely continue to be. I mentioned that Lipke and Perez Garcia, they came up with this for an 80-year rotation. We don't expect that our industrial plantations will be 80-year rotations. We're kind of working with 40, and in some cases going even lower than that. So we did our own analysis, and we also wanted to compare this to land, which would just be from, say, a clear cut, grown and taken out of production, allowed to possibly convert into an old growth stand over time. There's not as much danger in Western Washington of doing that as there might be in Eastern Washington and in the southern part of the Western United States where you have a bigger fire problem. We do not have the fire problem quite as bad. When we do that, we get a very interesting graph, and this is run over a period of 8 40-year rotations for the model, 320 years. So, you know, I don't feel confident about predicting 40 years into the future, but I feel very confident about predicting 320 years. So we've got our soil pool here, a slight increase associated, which we don't know if that soil pool is further increasable by fertilization, but the growth of the stands, okay, on 40-year rotations, and then with nitrogen fertilization, we assume that we can grow that same stand over and over again. So in the third case here, we have an old growth, and I'm using Mark Harmon and Jerry Franklin's data from about, 8 or 10 different old growth stands, ranging from a little bit over 100 to 800 years or so, peaking out at about 800 megagrams of carbon per hectare. One of the things that I bring home about this is that for the first period of time, there isn't a whole lot of difference if we include substitution on the carbon impact. But after about, say, 150 years or so, what we do see is that you get a bigger impact with substitution in an industrial forest on the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere than you do in an old growth forest, which peaks and then can't sequester any more carbon. This is because of substitution of products into the economy. So actually, I think I probably just stated my conclusions there. We do see a potential impact on the global carbon cycle, but it's less than 1%, okay? Most of that carbon's in soil. We don't know enough about soil, obviously, but we do know that when we make a treatment of the soil, which is what nitrogen fertilization is, we greatly affect the stand. Substitution of for wood for concrete and steel, very, very important, really needs to be considered, really needs to be modeled, and is somewhat of an unknown variable. But in the long term, it's absolutely essential that we do extract material from our forests. If we turn them all into reserves and don't take a stick of wood out of them, that will not have the same impact on the carbon cycle as if we pull that stuff out and put that wood into our economy. Okay? Thank you. And I hope if Dave comes by Seattle, we'll show him some of the benefits of substitution, and he'll be fitting that into his introductions later on as well. Thank you. Have time for a question?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. The question is about the amount of energy and carbon that's used to produce. Yeah, there is energy. In fact, it's natural gas that's used to produce a hydrogen. Interestingly enough, hydrogen powered cars now are, the hydrogen's made from natural gas too. So Arnold Schwarzenegger is not displacing any carbon by running a hydrogen powered car. But urea is kind of the same. We produce the hydrogen, then we take the nitrogen out of the atmosphere and fuse them together with using a lot of energy. And the evaluation using the response that I got was that we get about 66 grams of carbon for every gram of carbon we put into the atmosphere. Now, that doesn't include the flight of the helicopter. I just couldn't quite figure that out, but it's tiny in relationship to that 1 gram to produce the urea itself, okay? So the effect is really good if you consider it that way. Yeah?
So you have to continue with nitrogen fertilization in the long term to maintain productivity on this stand. What are the odds that when you're talking about a time scale of centuries that something else would become limiting more than nitrogen for the productivity on the site that would then affect the carbon cost to continue productivity?
Really good question. I think it comes back to a little bit about the part of the Fall River and Matlock studies that Brian didn't really cover. And that's that if you take out that wood, that bowl, and saw it up into tubifores, you didn't really remove much nutrient of the part of, hardly any of the capital. The wood is so deficient in nutrients that it's an incredibly efficient material to take out. The real danger in removing too much nutrients, at least in air forests, comes when we start cellulosic ethanol conversion and we start using all that bark and branches and maybe even the leaves, then we really start removing a large. But those nutrient pools are huge. Now, 320 years, I didn't do the nutrient evaluation on that. No problem. No problem at all removing the bowl. But we start coming up with other nutrients, particularly calcium. We can weather calcium out of our rocks. They're 2% calcium. But we don't know that that would actually happen. Phosphorus also comes up as a potential nutrient of concern when we start hugely removing larger pools. Change the genetics, increase the productivity. You also have the possibility of further increases by bringing the productivity above what I pointed out in that evaluation. Yes?
So thinking about your substitution issue, I sort of challenge you or sort of think about it in a broader context. We did the same analysis in Southeast Alaska, but came to the opposite conclusion based on the efficiency with which product is coming out of the forest.
Yeah, I can well imagine.
Associated costs. So that in that case, you're far better to leave the intact forest in terms of carbon storage than to try and produce the product.
I was supposed to do 5 years of work in Southeastern Alaska, but I was just absolutely appalled at what I saw that I shouldn't have probably expressed my opinion, but it was flown in a helicopter. I mean, it was just the inefficiencies I've seen in Alaska. I got to say that it's got to be embarrassing. And I can well imagine that taking a stick of wood out of Southeastern Alaska has got to be incredibly energy inefficient. But this is not Southeastern Alaska. This is 30% of the board foot production of the United States, and very profitable. Yes, it's ecotopia and all that, but the forest products industry is very, very important to the economy, and I think very efficient as well. So my analysis, I can think of reasons why it would be different. That doesn't mean it couldn't be more efficient in Alaska, but what I saw, I mean, flying people out in helicopters has got to use a lot of energy too. Yeah.
One more question for Rob, and I'd like to open up to the
audience.
Well, actually not. The assumptions of Perez Garcia, and they only use the current. When a house is torn apart, it's typically the components in it are landfilled, and they don't turn into CO2, or they're burnt, and they are used to displace energy that would be coal, natural gas, and so on. So they, in their model, they use the mix of different ways that it could go. Also, wood is quite a bit recycled, particularly the old big tubifores out of old houses in Seattle. They actually have a premium for that right now. I could sell the floor joists in my house for a lot more than Home Depot can sell because people want to pay a premium for the recycled wood. I'm not saying that makes sense, but also, when I remodeled my home and tore out material, I burn it in my wood stove. So there are ways that you can avoid just having that decay and go back in the atmosphere. And Perez Garcia was going with the mix that was supposedly occurring now. But you're right. If you just let it rot to the ground, that two by four is going to go right back into the atmosphere.